Welcome to the 243rd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thank you for listening. Well, the Austin Marathon is now in the books. We're going to do a recap of that and a few other things, but like we always get started, let's see what's growing in the backyard in Florida. I think we're almost in the 80s today. Humidity is back. When I was in Austin, they said it was humid up there. It was not. Florida's humid. We have the key to humidity down here. But anyway, it's good for the vegetables. Now that things are getting warm, tomatoes on the vine and picking some. Eggplants on my tower garden. Collard greens in the raised bed, kale on the tower garden, Swiss chard in the tower garden, avocado trees and mango trees are blooming. We have pepper plants that are blooming, the Thai chilies, so those are all good. I still have my microgreens going. My favorite are the broccoli, but I got some new varieties of basil to start. The peas are good. And again, you know, outside I put the leftovers from my microgreens in my flower beds, and especially where I have some fig trees planted, and I have this edible landscape now with peas and kale growing up there and some of the broccoli, so it's pretty cool. Cilantro's coming out of nowhere, so it's great to be able to go out in the yard and get fresh herbs. So I'm hoping by doing the basil microgreens and getting those started and then putting them out that I'll have basil scattered all over the place, so that's really exciting. I've enjoyed the fennel microgreens as well because, again, when I do pizzas or, do anything, soups that, before bean soup that it would have had, perhaps a sausage in another life, placing the fennel seeds really works well for that. So give microgreens a try. It doesn't take much effort. Just if you have a little window by the sun and a fairly stable environment, not too much breeze and not too much humidity. It works out really good. I received a lot of feedback on the last week's podcast cast with Nanette and Julie. People want to meet her, and you can meet her by coming to our 5th annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. It's going to be March 28th, all day long at the Port Charlotte Beach Complex. Breakfast and lunch, whole food plant-based. Pam Popper's going to be there, Karen Hartglass, Julie and Nanette, myself and Addie will be talking. We're going to do a format that are like TED Talks, so each of us are going to do 2 18-minute talks. We're going to have a cooking demonstration. We're going to have question and answer sessions, and it's a nice intimate setting so that people will be able to ask questions. You'll be sitting at round tables with other people that are like-minded, so unlike Julie and Nanette, who don't see a stranger when it comes to plant-based, some people say, I don't have any support. Well, this is a great day to have support and be immersed in people. Learn from your peers that are plant-based. Learn from other people's struggles. And also be motivated from all the accomplishments that are in the room. It's a really, really nice day, and it's a beautiful venue. So I hope you'll join us. There's still spots left for the immersion week if you want to join us the week before. We'll be exercising every morning. There'll be lectures and cooking classes and Pilates and yoga. And you'll have consultations with Addie Meinrich and myself in the beginning of the week and the end of the week to go over all your medical conditions and concerns. And we'll set up a plan for you so that when you leave Port Charlotte after the conference, you will be well on your way to becoming healthier than you've ever become. So go over to drdelaney.com. This is the time to do it and secure your spot. There will be a price increase in the conference starting March 9th. So get the tickets before the price goes up or the tickets sell out. They are going rather fast. I'm very excited that people aren't waiting to the last minute for the conference. So the tickets are flying out the door. Can't wait to see you all. So it's going to be really, really exciting. I will be speaking at the Port Charlotte or Punta Gorda Veg Fest here in a week, along with Michael Greger. So if you're coming, if you're in the area, you can come up to hear that. You know, these Veg Fests are free talks. There's lots of great people. Dr. Neil Barnard was down, Dr. Clapper. And they're nice free events that you can sit out and listen, but you don't really get to ask any questions. Certainly, you know, the food at a Veg Fest is more of, you know, it's not carnival food, but it's a little bit less than you would like to have nutrition-wise. Certainly, you don't get to meet as many people or be immersed in an intimate setting. So it's a good way to, you know, to learn about plant-based nutrition and get started. But if you really want to get into it and you really want to develop some good connections, come see us at our conference. So let's talk Texas. You know, Addie Delaney Meinrich lives in Houston. Her husband Nathan is one of the strength coaches for the University of Houston football team. And Houston is a lot like Florida. It's flat and humid. Not quite as humid as here, maybe. Maybe on some days it is. And we were sitting talking with their neighbors, telling them that we had registered for the Austin Marathon. And they're like, so you like hills? He's like, what do you mean? And he's like, yeah, that's hill country. And I did not know that Austin was hilly. But, you know, people that live in flat areas, you know, define a hill. You know, I'm from West Virginia in the mountains. I know hills. You know, so is it, you know, big hills, little hills, you know. And I've always been one of these people that, you know, take what people say and kind of divide it out a little bit and don't really think it's going to be quite as hilly as what it might have been. But, yes, it's hilly. It was hilly. I believe there was 1,060-foot elevation gain over the course of 26.2 miles. It was kind of funny when I was reviewing my Garmin data. The course looks like a cross. You start in town and you go south and then you go east and you go north and west. And the map in the east and west, the area is called Westlake Hills. And then the south is called Sunset Valley. So, you know, you have valley and hills. So you can only imagine what was in between. At one point, so you go south first, and then you go east, and then you go north, and then west, and then back into town. And in the northern part, and coming around west, you know, you kind of lose your bearings a little bit where my travel was cloudy that day. So it wasn't like I could really see where the sun was at all times, and you kind of lose your perspective. And I kept thinking, man, when are we going to turn around and see the beautiful buildings of Austin? It's a great skyline. It's like, I got to see those buildings that we're going to run to, because if I can't see those buildings, I'm not almost finished. And it took quite a while before you could see those buildings, you know, probably 4 miles left in the race before you could really start to get some glimpse of the buildings and, you know, around some of the corners and over the hills. So it took a while. My official time was 4 hours and 34 minutes. That was ninth in my age group. Wasn't the race I wanted, but if you look at all of my 30-some marathons, it was in the top 10 for sure as far as times go. On Saturday when we arrived, we went to Austin on Friday and found a really great vegan restaurant, yoga area in a little south of the city. And Saturday morning, so, you know, as far as people talk about traveling and food, and this was kind of a cafeteria style they made. One, they had, you know, one set of, I guess, one entree or one menu for breakfast, and you just did cafeteria style all you wanted. And they had homemade tortillas and greens. There's just beautiful fresh Swiss chard and spinach and kale and collards and pinto beans. And they had a lentil patty with carrots and rice. And they had oatmeal bar, so it was really great. So we had a great meal when we arrived there and walked around and toured around the city a little bit. And later that day, we stopped at a restaurant called True Food Kitchen. There's a couple of those around. There's one in Houston. There's one in Austin. And I actually had it was called... a bowl that was winter immunity. And I had not had lion's mane mushrooms before that weren't, you know, in the powdered form. So that was really cool to have that. There was farro and quinoa and carrots and broccolini and garbanzo beans, edamame, organic kale, and a garlic broth. And it was really, really good. We also had a cauliflower starter that was seasoned with dill, mint. It had some pistachios and dates, which was really, really tasty. Michael had a cauliflower polenta with broccolini, snow peas, edamame, snap peas, zucchini, watermelon, radish, miso, chili threads. I mean, so great, really, really good food. And the next morning we were at the hotel and, you know, we had our fruit, because I'm always worried about getting enough fruit when I travel. But there was oranges and apples and grapefruits and bananas. And so we had oatmeal. But I woke up with a kind of a scratchy throat and a little bit of, you know, congestion. And I wasn't quite sure whether it was the hotel. So, you know, I tried to push the fruit, try to push the fluids like you do. I didn't have a fever or anything. I didn't feel bad. So, you know, you ignore those things as much as you can. There's not much you can do about it. Later that evening, we had our pre-race meal, which is almost always Thai food. And I got it extra spicy so that I could kind of ward off everything. And that seemed to clear me up, you know, pretty good. So I thought I was kind of golden on that. And so we got out ready to start the race on Sunday morning. And there was a delay of 30 minutes as we were standing there in the crowd with 17,000 friends. Apparently somebody had went through the barricades, and there was a question of whether there had been a suspicious package left. So we stood there for 30 minutes to make sure the police cleared that, and thankful that they did, and everything was fine. It's kind of fun to stand in the crowds a little bit. You get to meet the people around you. I was actually standing near an Episcopal priest who was trying to set the Guinness Book of World Records running in a full frock. I don't believe he did it. But it was very nice. He was blessing everyone's souls around us. So that was a lot of fun. So you get to meet people. I standing by somebody that really almost ran near me when I was running the California International Marathon. We finished a couple minutes apart. So it's amazing the crowds and the people you get to talk to around. But anyway, we started off, and after that 30-minute delay, and I just didn't have much get up and go. I started with the 4-hour pace group because that's really where I was trying to hit, and just couldn't really get the leg speed up. It was very crowded in the corrals. They weren't seated like they were in Houston, so anybody could just kind of jump in and push in wherever they were. So there was a lot of slower people that were up front that, you know, when it started, you had to kind of go around people. And So I got separated from the pace group really quickly. Not that that made a big difference, because again, you know, once I, you know, I was having trouble 9:20, 9:15, I felt like I was pushing it, as opposed to when I did the California International Marathon, when I was doing 9:07s, 9:08s, it's like, oh, this feels nice and easy. This feels great. You know, I was all, so there's a big difference in how I felt from the very, you know, get-go. But again, I kind of attribute it to, you know, I've been standing around, just need to get your stride, get scattered out. We had talked with people about the course and, you know, went over it, and they knew the first 4 miles were largely uphill. You kind of go down and you start back up. But it was a pretty good climb, and it continued to climb. You know, we were again told that it was kind of rollers. Well, you know, it was kind of uphill, then down a little bit, then up and more up. And it never really leveled out, probably till like mile 18 after you went up a pretty good climb. And there was a couple, you know, right turns that you would start up a hill that it was almost, you know, you had no momentum going into this, you know, pretty steep hill. So it's, you know, got between my ears a little bit. I have to admit, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I'm already behind. And, you know, I thought, well, maybe this is good. You know, maybe this is good. I'm starting out slower. I'll have a better finish, because I, you know, I did know that after mile 18, it was going to be a flat spot and then finish hilling. So I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll come around, maybe it'll come around. And there were a few miles that I, you know, I came around a little bit, but I just never really could get loose and get into a good stride. And you know, I was running by myself. You know, you say by yourself, but you know, thousands of people around you, but I wasn't running in a pace group. And, you know, it just kind of gradually started to take its toll. And,
I was running by feel. I don't really look at my watch much after, I started looking when the splits started to go up. I was like, I'm going to do what I can. I looked at the people in front of me, tried to stay up. At one point in the race, the 4:15 group came around me, and I thought maybe I can force it a little bit and try to keep up with them. But I really couldn't. I just couldn't get my pace picked up. So I kind of went down, even further, and there was a point where my pace really dropped off, where I call it my Samantha miles. In the morning when I do my runs, the first mile is a kind of a walk run with Samantha and Gretchen, and then Samantha comes back at the house after about a mile and a half, and then Gretchen and I go out for another three or four, and then I do my speed work by myself. So I got slowed down to Samantha pace there for a little bit, a couple miles, and it was near the end, somewhere in those mid to late miles, I should say, with about 4 miles left, I heard somebody yelling in the back, let's keep up. You can finish in 4 hours and 30 minutes. And that was the 4 hour and 30 minute pace group that was coming up behind me. I was like, no way am I going to let them pass me, So I could hear them in the background. I did not turn around to see them. I didn't know how far back they were, but I started to pick up my pace, and I was able to pick up my pace enough for the last 4 miles to keep that group from passing me. So when I go back and look at all the data, one, my heart rate was pretty high for the whole race. That probably has something to do with this cold that kind of came back. And just the day, I don't think I was under hydrated pretty good the day before. So I don't think there was anything I could have done differently. I slept well. But my heart rate was high for the pace I was running. Probably too much in the early beginning. A smarter person might have slowed down even further when I didn't have a good feeling at that first couple of miles. It might have been a good time to back off even further and hold it. So instead of trying to force 9:20, maybe go back to 9:45 and see if I could get in the groove of things and then speed up as I went. That's easy looking retro, back at the time. I didn't want to slow up anymore. I was going for it. I'm trying to get to 4 hours, So, would that have helped me get closer to the 4 hours? It might have got me to a 4:15 perhaps, or a 4:20 instead of the 4:34. Still wasn't 4 hours. So, hey, you might as well push the pace and get some good training out of it, right? I always think that when I have the slowdown Sammy miles, at the 18 mile mark, so to speak, 18, 20, that area that, my head gets the best of me. But, in retrospect, when I look at that, slowing down right there allowed me to kind of gather myself enough to have a little bit more speed at the end. So there was nothing I could do at that point. When the 4 hour and 15 minute group passed me, I couldn't speed up anymore, no matter how much I wanted. But I was able to speed up when I heard the 4 hour and 30 minute people coming a little bit later. So, going slow for a little bit gave me enough recovery time. My heart rate came down substantially into the 130s is where I do my long, easy runs, but I had been up in the 150s where I do my 10K pace. And, the other thing I'll talk about a little bit is lactic threshold. I wear a Garmin watch that kind of calculates your lactic threshold. And it's a calculation. If you were really going to do a lactic threshold, it's taking a finger prick at peak exercise. And when your lactic threshold gets to a certain level, it's so much lactic acid in your blood, then that becomes the threshold when it kind of levels off. But the Garmin will figure it out based on your pace and your heart rate and your time and all that kind of stuff. And so my lactic threshold had actually declined from what it was in December after I had that little sinus infection around Houston. So it had actually come down. So that heart rate's about 147. Now, again, it's a calculation. It's not entirely accurate, but it's fairly close. So, if I'm out running a 9:30 pace, has been feeling pretty easy, 9:28, 20 pace, not too bad. So, it's right in that, it's not too far off the mark of what the pace, that that pace should be. So pushing my heart rate in the 150s early on was, you know, now I'm producing a lot of lactic acid. So, you know, translated, looking in hindsight, you can see why I went to the Sammy pace at mile 18 or 19. I just had more lactic acid build up than I could tolerate. My pace slowed down. I was able to clear it. And then I was able to pick up my pace. So had I kept my heart rate down earlier a little bit more, then I might not have had such a slowdown in the Sammy slowdown 18, 19 miles. But, and not to say anything bad about Sammy, because she's a really good girl dog. My best girl friend dog. So she's sitting right here. So, you know, Sammy's my pal. So it's nothing bad about Sammy miles. It's just how we run. But anyway, so you kind of look back, hindsight, you know, should I have done something, you know, different at that point? I wasn't really looking at my heart rate in the beginning. And again, it would have been, you know, I could have done all those justifications. You know, you're starting out, you're going up a hill, your heart rate's higher, you've got to suck it up. And even in CIM, I was able to tolerate a bit of a higher heart rate than what was predicted. But, you know, I also think that it wasn't, my head didn't get the best of me, causing me to slow down. I think there was a lactic acid component that really did slow me down. So what did I learn from all that, and what would I do differently? I don't know. You know, I don't know. You know, if I looked at my races, this wasn't as good a race for me as California International Marathon. It was a harder course. But I was hoping that my fitness had improved enough that I would, you know, could maintain that pace. You know, was hoping that my sinus infection of, you know, a month ago or 3 weeks ago didn't, you know, cause me as much grief as what I probably knew it did. But, you know, if you never go for it, you don't really know. So I guess I don't have any regrets. Like I said, as for a bad marathon, it was one of my better ones. So it was a good miss, so to speak. If you looked at my age group, I was, you know, about probably a little over halfway, I was still in about fifth place. So had I slowed down, you know, I'd have moved up in places a little bit, perhaps if I'd have, you know, been able to hold on to things. But again, you know, we weren't going for that. I was really wanting to go for 4 hours. So I think it was good to, if you're going to race, you know, go ahead and race. If you're going to go for, you know, a time period. So if you don't put it on the line, you never know what you're going to get. So I think I gave it my all for that day. And I have a quads to back that up. I'm recording this on Wednesday, and I'm still have some pretty good quad soreness. Every bit as much as I had in California, maybe a little bit more. So, you know, I don't think I could have pushed it much more. And then, of course, then the head cold got much worse, you know, the day after the race and into that evening. So, you know, it was coming on. I still didn't have a fever. I was still in no danger. The other thing fun that the Garmin does is it looks at your body battery. And again, it takes your sleep and your heart rate and your respirations into account. It comes up with this this body battery. And usually when you go to sleep and you wake up in the morning, your body battery is someplace between 75 and 100. And as the day goes, you burn up your body battery and it'll go down to, you know, 5 or 6 or whatever. Well, the day after the race, my body battery only went up to 5. And then the next day it only went up to 13. And today it only went up to 51. So I'm getting better, but you know, I did, you know, by everything that I can look at, my heart rate, my respirations, my soreness, I pretty much, I think I left most of it out there. So I don't have any regrets of dogging it or, you know, mentally collapsing, causing my slower time. I think it was just one of those days, you know, they can't all be the best days. But there was a story, and that's the most important part. Again, a lot of hills, and but Austin, you know, is a great town. I really enjoyed it. People were nice. We went to Lance Armstrong's bike shop. He wasn't there. He also didn't do the race. I don't know why. But we got to see where his bike shop was and see some of the different sites. And again, we had fabulous food, fabulous vegan food. And the funny thing, we found this food truck and ATX food truck. And we didn't even realize what ATX stood for early on, which is Austin, Texas. And we didn't make that connection. So we kind of had a little bit of laugh afterwards, but we had great tempeh and quinoa and greens after the marathon at the vegan food truck. So it was great. So 5 stars to vegan food in Austin, as well as Houston, but you know, we were racing in Austin. So that was really, really good. Would I go back and try to redeem myself at that race again? Maybe someday. There's a lot of races that'll probably take precedent. We want to do the full Houston Marathon next year. So, and maybe the Cowtown Marathon in Texas. But there's a lot of races. We met some people that have a trail running company. So, yeah, you know, to do some of the trail races there. So, there's, you know, the bottom line is there's so many places to run. There's so many great marathons out there. I've always made doing marathons a way of vacationing and seeing the sights. And there is no better way to see a city than running 26 miles through it. So I've encouraged anybody to, you know, use marathoning as a way to see a city and vacation. And that's how I started out. You know, I just signed up for a marathon and it made me travel to that particular city. And it was, a great way. You go places during a marathon that you never would in a car or a taxi. And see sights and meet people and local people and local restaurants. So it's a great way to travel and keep fit. So I'll spend the rest of this week recovering. I think I have a cycle ride, you know, or a slow bike ride spin later in the week. And then I'll start running again on the weekend and start the build up for Asheville. And that's right before the conference, March 21st and 22nd, I believe, whatever that weekend is. We'll do the half marathon on Saturday and the whole marathon on Sunday. And I'm really excited about that because I thought Asheville was hilly until Austin. And so now Asheville is really doable. There's some big hills in the beginning and some big hills on the backside of the marathon, but there's a lot of flat too. So really flat. So I'm really excited to do the half and the whole there. The big challenge is how hard do you run the half? And so you can run the whole good. But again, you know, we're not going, you know, as my dad said, we didn't come here to lay up, you know? So if you're going to play a new golf course, you go for it. And, you know, you give it your best shot. There's always a good story if you give things your best shot. I think in my training, you know, I want to do more tempo runs, more harder runs. But again, my coach will be dictating those runs to me. He wants me to run more by feel so I can dial that in more. It's still, you know, the more I race, the better I'll understand the feel of things so I can adjust better. So I think I have to keep pushing it until I get that down, push it in. You know, my hard days training need to be hard and my easy days need to be easier. That's what I tell my people as well. You know, if you're going to go out and do a hard workout, it should be a hard workout, but an easy workout should be an easy workout. Most of us, I know myself, I like that gray zone where it's not too hard, not too easy, that kind of a pace, but it really doesn't get us the training, what we need. And you kind of get stuck in a pace zone that's, again, not too fast, not too slow. So, you got to push both ends of things to improve. I was lax on my strength training. You know, I've been doing my planks. I've been doing a little strength training, but not near enough. So I think for the hills of Asheville and to push myself further, I'm going to have to get my hamstrings and my glute and my back a little stronger. I guess the other question comes, you know, what's with this sinus infection and a cold coming back? You know, I don't get sick. I'm a vegan. I'm plant-based. You know, I shouldn't be ill. I should be immune to all this stuff. You know, I think the bugs are getting bigger, you know, and even us plant strong people can't dodge all of them. You know, add that into, yeah, I took a few days off. The last infection I had in Houston, I had a fever for 3 or 4 days. And I think that wipes you out more than, you know, than you think you come back from it. But, you know, I kind of went back and did training. I missed a long run. But, you know, why do plant-based people get sick? My immunity, I'm supposed to be, you know, so immunocompromised, or not immunocompromised, but so immunocompetent. You know, I ate tons of fruit, I ate tons of vegetables, you know, but, you know, it happens. I also work long hours and, you know, push my training. So your immune system is struggling a little bit. Should I listen to my body a little bit more? Yes, perhaps I should. You know, you're flying, you get exposed. So, you know, I think that I bounce back quicker than I would if I was eating a standard American diet, but it doesn't make me completely immune to, you know, having repeated exposures to people with upper respiratory tract infections and viruses. I kept telling myself and all the people that I was exposed to in my office that, you know, hey, you know, same virus I already had, but, you know, you just don't know. So was I completely over the other one? And then this one just kind of relapsed, or is this was a new virus? You know, certainly didn't have a fever this time, but it does play, you know, play with you a little bit. I thought I really need to up my fruit intake, you know, when I'm traveling. The day when I'm, you know, we took apples and, you know, oranges on the plane, had blueberries in the oatmeal, but, you know, travel day is pretty tough with fruit, you know, to really get good fruit, fresh fruit. When we got to the hotel, certainly we had grapefruit, oranges, bananas, some more blueberries, strawberries. Still probably not quite as much as I normally eat. You know, you're out, you're moving around. Again, you have such a high exposure to other people. You know, had lots of greens. You know, I mean, everything that I eat is, you know, just really kind of race specific to eat, you know, nothing fast food. It's always, you know, it's all whole foods. So, you know, it just happens and you have to deal with the infections as they come. You know, I'm going to rest and take it easy. And again, more fruit and build up my immunity. And we go again, you know, it'll all work itself out. And, you know, can't live in a bubble. So you take your chances and then you deal with the consequences and go on. But I think that, you know, I think my being a vegan doesn't make you bulletproof, but you might be able to take a bullet a little bit better. So, you know, can I improve on my fruit a little bit during travel? And I'm going to try, but, you know, it is what it is. And you eat the best that you can in your circumstances and try to wash your hands. But, you know, the exposure is really high. Last thing I wanted to do was change gears and talk about a study about too much sitting and heart disease. There was a study published in American Heart Association Journal. The author was from Arizona State, Dorothy Sears, and she looked at postmenopausal women. And the average age were 63 years of age. There were 518 women, and they were Hispanics and non-Hispanics. They all were overweight with a BMI of 31, meaning that they met the body mass index to be obese. Those people in the top that had the most sitting, 8.5 hours, you know, that was like the kind of cutoff to be in the high. If you had 8.5, the Hispanics sat on average 8.5 hours, the non-Hispanics 9 hours. Each additional hour that people sat increased their fasting insulin levels of 6%, increased their insulin resistance risk to 7%. Each additional 15 minutes that they sat without getting up increased their insulin level 7%, increased their insulin resistant 9%. So what that translates out to is that, again, if you're not moving, you're not burning your glucose. You know, they're taking in a similar amount of calories, but, you know, being sedentary is going to, you know, it decreases your muscle mass, your mitochondria, your ability to process glucose. And even if you can just get up every 15 minutes, you can do yourself a favor, if you have a job that requires you to sit. You know, nobody's, you know, get up and move around, walk around the table, do a couple squats. That's going to help. Anything you can, you know, I tell my patients that there's no reason why you can't get a minimum of 7,000 steps a day. 10,000 is even better. At the hotel, I calculated that I did 100 steps making my bed. No, I'm sorry. It was 200 steps making the bed, just going around the bed, you know, making the bed. And, you know, so doing those things, you know, make sure, don't cheat, you know, go back and forth around the bed to make your bed. If you go out in the morning, 1,000 steps, come back in before lunch, go out 1,000 steps, in the evening, 1,000 steps, you know, walk around between TV shows, you know, all those things can decrease your sitting, increase your steps, increase your metabolism, and help your metabolic levels. It's the high insulin levels that people have that cause the inflammation in the body, So again, they get more inflammation, you get more pain in your joints. Insulin also leads to high insulin growth factors, stimulate tumor cell growth. So people that have high insulin levels have increased risk for cancers. So increased cancer, increased inflammation, decreased, you know, you're hungry more because you don't generate hormones that decrease your hunger. Your platelets tend to be more activated, more likely to clot when you're sitting. People that are overweight, especially in the obese category, that their legs swell, they have less venous return, more inclined to blood clots. So it's really important for people to get up and move, especially if they're overweight, because of the risk of blood clots. So don't take that lightly at all. You know, continue to move it. Anything, anytime you can, you're generating, you know, you're using more energy, you're using your muscle mass. And they actually found that, you know, people that are overweight have more muscle mass because they actually have to lift that weight. So the more you move, the more you're actually gonna burn. The other hint is to keep your mouth shut when you're moving, because if you keep your mouth shut and you're breathing through your nose, you're gonna deliver more oxygen to your tissues. That increased oxygen is going to allow you to burn more fat instead of just burning the glucose off that you're taking in. So you want to burn those fat stores too. So get up, move around, keep your mouth shut, breathe from your diaphragm, fill your lungs from the bottom up, and things will be much better. And the other study that I'd like to talk about was one in the Journal of American College of Cardiology, where they looked at changes in the gut microbes and the metabolites. So depending on what you eat, it's kind of the bacteria that you grow in your gut. So if you're eating dead, decaying meat, you'll grow bacteria that can handle dead, decaying meat. If you're eating high-fiber plant food, then you'll develop bacteria more along the species that like high fiber. And it turns out that when you eat meat or you eat eggs, when those are broken down, they mix with your gut microbes, and you generate a metabolite called trimethylamine and oxide, which is labeled TMAO. And TMAO increases inflammation in the arterial wall and is associated with coronary artery disease, coronary risk, and coronary events such as heart attacks. On the other hand, if you're eating a high fiber diet, you generate short chain fatty acids. So they looked at people over a 10-year period. And the people that were in the highest range for the highest change in their gut microbes, so they looked 760 people, and the people that had the highest TMAO levels had the most coronary artery disease. So between when they started in 1989, 1990 to 2000 and 2002, the people that had the largest change in TMAO levels had the most increased risk for coronary artery. So it's very important, you know, your nutrition over the long run. When you think, again, like I talked about the last podcast, these people that are eating a carnivore diet or high fat, high meat diet, they're generating all these TMAO levels that are causing all this inflammation in the coronary arteries. That just does not go away. It tends to accumulate. You have to have the short chain fatty acids to make, you know, the good chemicals in your brain to be able to metabolize glucose and cholesterol appropriately to generate energy. You know, so it's a much more efficient system when you're feeding your gut high fiber diet. So it's not just about the meal; it's about the long term effects you have when you're throwing, you know, this bad food. And you know, when people say, "I only have a steak once a month" or "once in a while." Well, you're selecting for these bad bacteria that are going to make these chemicals that are harmful over the long term. So it's not like, you know, it's just a one and done and it doesn't count. It does count. So every meal does count. So choose things wisely that's going to help you perform the best, help you think the best, help you in your long-term health. And if you can just have that 90-second pause, you know, before you make that decision, do I really want this? Is it really going to help me? Is it going to help me, you know, to accomplish what I want to accomplish, both nutritionally and you know, through your activity in your daily life, to be able to do what you want to do. So that's where eggs sneak in and cause these TMAO levels to rise. You know, and if they're hidden in pastries, again, the TMAO levels are going to rise. So you know, eat your fruits and vegetables, high fiber, do the best you can, because we know even if you do the best you can, you're still susceptible to some of these things. So yeah, you have to put on a good fight, and you have to have good defenses. So remember, life is a lot like a marathon, and you've got to train for it. So if you want to train with us and you want to hear some great talks, again, come down and join us for our immersion week, March 22nd through the 28th. Come down for the conference on the 28th. Get your tickets soon. Make your hotel reservation soon, because this is season in Florida. Everybody wants to be here. We have beautiful weather right now, low humidity, 80 degrees, sunshine, blue skies. So come down and join us at a beautiful venue right on the water. Plant-based breakfast and lunch, speakers, great friends, great connections, great activities. See you soon. Go to the website, drdelaney.com. Get your tickets. Call us. Email us if you have any further questions. Jamie@drdelaney.com. Email, and it's the web address is drdoctordulaney, spelled out, doctor.com. Make sure you get the tickets quickly, because, again, there will be a price increase for the last few tickets. So get on the board, get on the horn, get it done, and look forward to seeing you. Thanks for listening.